Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
If you're waiting for another shoe to drop in MLB, in that cheating scandal, well, it dropped last night. The Boston Red Sox and Alex Cora released a statement that read in part, and I quote, "Today we met to discuss the commissioner's report related to the Houston Astros investigation. Given the findings and the commissioner's ruling, we collectively decided that it would not be possible for Alex to effectively lead the club going forward, and we mutually agreed to part ways," end quote. Ah, the old mutually agreed to part ways. You know, a conscious uncoupling, a mutual decision. Sure it's not. That's the Red Sox trying to get out in front of this and get rid of Cora before Major League Baseball made it impossible to keep Cora. It's smart. You know, rip off the Band-Aid before MLB made them do it. Because once MLB's report came out detailing what went down with the Astros, and that report put a ton of that at the feet of Cora, and then A.J. Hinch was suspended a year for his role, you knew Cora was going to get hit even harder. Because as Commissioner Rob Manfred wrote, again, quote, "Cora was involved in developing both the banging scheme and utilizing the replay review room to decode and transmit signs. Cora participated in both schemes and through his active participation implicitly condoned the player's conduct. I will withhold determining the appropriate level of discipline for Cora until after the Department of Investigations completes its investigation of the allegations that the Red Sox engaged in impermissible electronic sign stealing in 2018 while Cora was the manager," end quote. All right then, go ahead and start connecting the dots. Alex Cora developed the so-called banging scheme and the replay review room decoding project in Houston in 2017, and then was under a separate investigation for what happened in Boston in 2018. So if A.J. Hinch got a year for not participating, what is Cora going to get for being the guy who organized it and was an active participant? And if the Astros fired Hinch for what he did, there's no way the Red Sox could stand by Cora after what he did. So the question is not, would Cora be suspended, but rather for how long? And if a big part of Houston's punishment was because they continued doing it after they were warned, if Cora did it in Houston and then he did it in Boston, how many years is he looking at? And let me step in right now and say this. I like Alex Cora. I really enjoyed having him on this show. He is a great interview. He's smart as hell. But apparently, he cheats like hell. I mean, what a freaking trajectory this is. Bench coach on a World Series winner in 17. Wins the World Series in 18 in his first season as a manager. And then gets bleep canned in January of 2020. Two World Series winning managers out of their jobs in a matter of 24 hours. And for Cora, in his first season, he had 108 wins in the regular season. He was 11-3 in the postseason. They steamrolled everybody. And apparently, they were cheating along the way. And again, how is Carlos Beltran, the new Mets manager, who was actively involved in well as an Astros player, currently skating? And as with the Astros, there are people in the game who have receipts. Like current Met and former Blue Jay Marcus Stroman. You see, last season, he had quick pitched in a game against the Red Sox, and Cora didn't like that. Cora said, quote, "It's the same thing with him every day. He competes a certain way, and people don't like it," end quote. Uh-oh! Stroman tweeted this yesterday, quote, "This man had the audacity to say that I compete a certain way, and people don't like it? Very comical in hindsight, LOL." He's right. It is comical. In fact, rich as hell. And it's the kind of thing you're probably going to hear a lot of in the wake of this scandal, and it's going to stick to him and them forever. This is why it's equally laughable to me when Astros owner Jim Crane says the championship is not tainted, that this does not taint the world championship. The hell it doesn't, Jimbo. Just be glad they're going to let you keep that world championship. But don't think for a second that people are not going to see it as tainted and remind you of such every chance they get, because you know they will. And to those who want to defend the Astros and the Red Sox by saying everybody's doing it, I don't know that everybody's doing it, but I'm pretty certain the Astros and the Red Sox are not the only ones doing it. That said, let's get to something else quickly before I go to break in this conversation. And that's some of your moronic, half-baked, and really flat-out idiotic takes on the topic. You know how they say there's no such thing as a bad idea? That's wrong. There are bad ideas. There are a lot of bad ideas. Just about every, quote, suggestion or outside-the-box solution to this problem is a terrible idea. Here's what's not going to happen. Barring something dramatic, the Astros are not going to be stripped of their title. And there's not going to be some other punishment that involves the Astros and the Red Sox opponents getting extra outs or more at-bats or whatever other scheme you have in mind. And here's the other thing. It's probably true. I'm guessing some of you are kind of bent right now at the Astros and the Red Sox. You might be a Dodger fan who feels like you got worked in the World Series, not once but twice. I understand that. I know why you're really angry about that. But you're not getting a World Series trophy. Not because of that. And if you did, would it really make you feel any better? It certainly wouldn't feel like you actually won it. And here's the other group that I'm talking to. Astros fans and Red Sox fans and fans of any other team that gets caught up in this. I get that you might be bitter that your team let you down. And I'm saying this because I got some of this on the show yesterday. Here's what's not going to happen. You're not going to quit the sport. You're not going to quit your favorite team. You might think that right now, but you go ahead and give it a few months or a few days or a few hours or a few minutes or a few seconds. Trust me, you'll forget about all this. You know, the guy who tried to organize a fan strike when there's a lockout or a player strike can't believe what an utterly ridiculous notion this is to say that you're going to stop following your team cold turkey. So no, I'm not interested in videos of you burning your old Nolan Ryan or Dwight Evans jerseys. That's not happening. I don't doubt that you're pissed, but save the calls about how you've been a fan of your team for decades and now you're never going to watch them ever again or follow the game ever again. If you didn't leave after guys were roiding up to their eyeballs, you're not leaving now. Now, if you want to have a serious conversation about this, we can. But if you want to spitball some wacky ideas that'll make this right, or lie about how you'll never support your favorite team ever again, and you're swearing off the entire sport once and for all, man, take that someplace else, because that's all bullcrap. Go ahead. Lie to yourself. Just don't lie to me and the rest of the jungle. Unless you have some pure gold and solutions, like my man Robert in Oklahoma did yesterday.
Thanks for welcome to the jungle. I've been listening since 2000. Hey, listen, if you really want to punish the players, Jim, you got to make an uneven playing field. Let's say for the first 20 games of the following season, the Astros have to play at a disadvantage. The opposing team gets four outs instead of three outs for the first 20 games. That would deter cheating.
Okay. Now, if you've got some gold like that, that's fine. If not, stay the hell down and just deal with it. Robbie, my man, nice job. Nice job calling at the end of the program yesterday. On Tuesday, he is a busy man. He's Tom Verducci. Tom, good to have you back. How are you?
Good. I am busy. What a week, huh?
What a week, I'll say. So you've been all over the fallout, Tom, from the sign-stealing scandal the last few days. There are so many things to talk about. Our time is limited. Let me pick my spots. But as somebody who's been around the game a long time, what was your initial reaction when you first heard about the allegations involving the Astros?
Not surprising. Anybody around the game in 2017 knew that there was a lot of problems going on. Once baseball put those replay monitors in real time, by the way, down by the dugout, they were inviting trouble. And it took them a while to catch on to the problem. What surprised me was the length or the seriousness of the punishment. But then after reading the commissioner's 9-page statement, which, by the way, was extremely detailed and transparent, then I got it. Then I understood. It was far worse than I or most people imagined.
You know, I'm not saying this for effect. I mean this sincerely. Almost everybody I know now has trouble sleeping. Do you fit into that? Are racing thoughts overtaking your night of sleep? Are you tired of not being able to sleep? Do you have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep? If so, it's time for you to try Ebb. If you've tried everything from pills to pillows with little success, it is time for you to try Ebb. Ebb comfortably cools your forehead, and it helps to quiet the racing mind, and it promotes the natural onset of sleep. Ebb is the first and only wearable, drug-free solution that targets the root cause of sleeplessness, the racing thoughts. Ebb applies precise and continuous cooling to the forehead, which calms your mind. Plus, it's clinically validated, and 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb Sleep is a wearable solution that fits over the forehead and gently and precisely cools the forehead to reduce those racing thoughts, and it allows people who are suffering from sleeplessness to drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. And Ebb Sleep is designed to work with your natural sleep-wake rhythms to allow you to get into that deep sleep more quickly. This is a real issue. Many people I know have trouble sleeping. You want to have the energy to do the things that you love again, and you need to get the sleep in order to do them. Ebb's natural solution has no morning side effects and allows you to get back to your peak performance. And right now, you can try Ebb, risk-free, for 60 nights to confirm that it is the solution you have been looking for. Go to tryebb.com/Rome. That's tryebb.com/Rome. Again, tryebb.com/Rome. Order today and get the sleep you need and deserve. Tom Verducci is my guest. So, Tom, in the past, stealing signs has been generally dealt with fairly lightly. Some would even argue that it was part of the game, maybe deal with it with a wink and a nod. Why is this so different?
This is so different because it involves technology, and there really are no precedents before. In fact, Rob Manfred looked up historical precedents of how baseball dealt with other instances of sign stealing, you know, whether it might be persons in the stands or a light in the scoreboard that was blinking. This is a whole different level. The Houston Astros had a dedicated camera in center field, supposedly for training purposes. It was allowed by MLB in 2017, dedicated on the home plate area. So you got every catcher signed, and they figured out, let's put the monitor down by the dugout in real time. And that's something obviously baseball didn't anticipate. They've put in some protocols since then to safeguard against using that type of system. But, you know, where do you go from here now? Because technology only becomes more efficient, better. We don't even know what the next wave is going to be in terms of how teams can use technology. So this was important to set a precedent. It's looking back on a system that I don't think is in place now, but more so it's looking forward to say, hey, whatever else comes down the line here, you guys are on notice, at least as far as GMs and managers. You're putting your job on the line to figure out what your team is doing in terms of use of technology or misuse of it.
We are talking to Tom Verducci. You know, Tom, it's funny because, well, it's not funny, but to me it's curious, that point you made about you've been put on notice. Like, in the wake of the Red Sox incident, Manfred warned every team about this, yet 6 days later, the Astros are banging trash cans against the White Sox. So in your mind, what was the great offense? Cheating or doing it so brazenly after the commissioner told every team not to and doing so less than a week later?
Clearly it was the latter. I mean, that is the clear line in the sand. September 15th, 2017, Manfred has his eyes opened up that, oh my goodness, technology now is run amok in the game. It's not being used the way that we thought. The Red Sox with the whole Apple Watch thing, it was the Yankees who called the commissioner's office to complain about that. They found out that, yes, they were using the replay monitor and an Apple Watch to decode sign. So he puts the warning out there that, hey, from now on, this is what's going to happen, guys. You're going to be severely punished if you do anything like this. And yes, the Astros kept doing it. In other words, they could have banged on that trash can and wore themselves out up until September 15th and not faced any punishment. And instead, they continued. And in fact, Rob Manfred doubles down the next March in bold-faced type, makes it absolutely clear if there was any ambiguity before, there was none then. And then they went on to another system in 2018. That's why they got banged on this. And by the way, Jeff Luhnow got that memo September 15, 2017. He doesn't share it with his manager, A.J. Hinch. He doesn't go downstairs to make sure that his team's in compliance. That alone is a fireable offense when you have an all-point bulletin like that and you do not circulate it.
Tom Verducci is joining us, breaking down a whole lot here. So, Tom, when you mentioned looking forward and you mentioned technology, there's been talk of trying to thwart this by using lights on the pitcher's mound that only the pitcher can see. Like, is more technology the answer, or is it less?
I'm in the camp of less. You know, I've heard this, and they've tried it out. It's actually not ready yet in terms of technology of a light system on the pitching rubber the only pitcher can see. Well, what happens if people have cameras at the top of the ballpark and can look down on it? I mean, I to me, let's play American Legion baseball. You know, turn the tech off. Once the game starts, man, it's about your ability against my ability. I don't want games decided by a nerd cave back behind the dugout with kids or not, I shouldn't say kids, they're really smart people now. These quants and analysts who can break down video are telling people what the sign sequences are. I don't want games decided that way. You know, when you took the SAT test, you know, you could have studied as much as you want, hired a tutor, looked everything up online, but once you walk in that room and the so-called game starts, you're on your own. You're not bringing your laptop in there to look up answers. That's what baseball should be. When you played it in American Legion ball, the umpire said play ball. You didn't have to go back and look at your last at bat on a video monitor in a video room. Shut the room, play baseball, don't play high-tech baseball.
We are talking to Tom Verducci for a couple of more moments. We're talking about a level playing field is what we're talking about. So, Tom, where do you come out on this? Former Astros pitcher Mike Fiers went public about the system, but that means there are plenty of other guys who played in Houston or other teams that were doing something similar who never spoke about it. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's part of the culture of the game. And if you notice, Jim, look around, all these players who have like to be active on social media, where are the comments from active players about the Houston Astros players? I mean, it's like radio silence, right? Don't you think that's strange? We've had players take on Alex Cora or A.J. Hinch for their supposed hypocrisy, but the players ran the system. Why are they silent? Well, it reminds me of the steroid era, echoes of the steroid era. You better not be throwing stones when your own house is dirty. And there's a lot of that going on. Yes, teams, players change teams a lot. They were part of systems with other teams. It's just curious to me that there's been a lot of silence about the Houston Astros players. The players were the ones who took advantage of this system. And if you're a pitcher, man, and you lost a game to the Astros and you gave a big hit in a key situation, how does not just chap you right now to think that maybe they had your signs?
Right. And if you're a pitcher for the L.A. Dodgers, Tom, or you're a member on any level of the L.A. Dodgers organization, how do they feel right now?
It's a great question, man. And I go right to Clayton Kershaw. How can you not, right? Game 5 of the World Series, he's winning 4-0. Dodgers win that game. They go home one win away from winning their first World Championship since 1988. And he could be the one to bring him to the brink of winning that championship, up 4-0. All of a sudden, Correa turns on a fastball for a double. Gurriel gets a pitch. I think it was a slider. He hits out for a 3-run homer. He gives up 6 runs in Minute Maid Park. Now that we know that they were using a system throughout the postseason, I don't know what pitches they had or where the game turned, but that's the problem. The question of what if is over every single pitch. And if you're Clayton Kershaw, think about how your legacy might be different if you win that game. I know. I mean, let's face it. He's got a reputation for a guy who hasn't won the big games in the postseason. That was certainly a big one, and he coughed up a 4-0 lead. Did the Astros have help with that? We don't know, and that's why it's really so poisonous to think about the history of the game, because we don't know, but it is questionable.
Tom Verducci, my guest. One last thought, Tom. So we're talking about the players, and if the investigation revealed that what happened in Houston was player-led with the involvement of Alex Cora, but the only player mentioned is Carlos Beltran, why do you think there has not been any punishment for the players involved?
It's a great question. I think people have a hard time understanding this. You have to go back to that first memo that went out, and Manfred made a decision right then to put the teams on notice, talking about general managers and managers specifically, and not on the players. Why? Because this was a system, again, a challenge-based replay system that MLB instituted. They brought this into the game, so therefore it's up to their own stewards of the game to make sure there's a culture that exists where it's used properly and guard against its misuse. That onus is on management, not on players. The other thing here is, I mean, think about if you wanted to go after players and how murky that job would be, trying to figure out who used the system, to what degree that they benefit from it, how often they used it. How do you start dealing out penalties to the players? I mean, they said in the report virtually every Astros player knew about this and took advantage of it, but to what degree? And I know the Players Association has, you know, listen, they have protection for their players that management doesn't have. There's an appeal process, a grievance process. That's secondary to the fact that just trying to decide players involvement to a very finite degree, that's just the road it's almost impossible to go down.
I mentioned that yesterday also was quite a day for the Carolina Panthers. First, you had the news that Joe Brady, the star co-offensive coordinator at LSU, was going to join the Panthers as an offensive coordinator. Now, if you're looking to hire the hottest offensive mind in football, it does not get much hotter than the guy who just coached Joe Burrow to the greatest single season that a college quarterback has ever had. And then it doesn't get much fresher than announcing it less than 24 hours after the confetti fell in New Orleans. So that's another sharp move for David Tepper. First, you get Matt Rhule, one of the most respected coaches in college football, and then you chase that with Joe Brady, one of the most stunning assistants in college football, and a guy who has experience in the NFC South with the Saints. Now, it doesn't mean it's guaranteed to work out and that the Panthers are going to start stacking trophies, but it's a really good start, and to me, a very good hire. And then on top of that came the next piece of news from Charlotte, also a stunner, but not in a good way.
I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to play this game since I was in fourth grade, and I've been with the Panthers now for 8 years, and it's never the right time to step away, but now is the right time for me, and it's a tough decision. I've thought about it a lot, and I think now is the right chance for me to move on.
That's Luke Kuechly in the Carolina Panthers linebackers room, recording a video telling everybody that he's retiring. So on the one hand, I want to say it's shocking, but then again, it's not. A 7-time Pro Bowler, member of 7 All-Pro teams, including 5 times as a first-team All-Pro, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and he's retiring at the age of 28. The shocking part is not that he's retiring at 28, it's that he's only 28. It feels like he'd been in Carolina forever. That's how Kuechly he became a dominant player, practically from the moment he arrived, and how much of a mainstay he was in Carolina. And now he's leaving well before his 30th birthday. And while he did not explain why he's leaving, the speculation, of course, would be that it's connected to his health and the impact the game takes on its body, his body, your body, and your mind. Especially when you play the game the way he played, hard and fast. He's had 3 known concussions, multiple shoulder surgeries, and I'd be hard-pressed to think of a more haunting image than Kuechly sobbing in 2016 as he was carted off the field. That image is really scary and haunting. Whenever I've heard his name since then, it was always one of the very first things I thought of. And if you want to know the kind of respect he has from his teammates and opponents, check out the reaction from players on Twitter. I could be here all day long reading it, but here are a couple of mentions. Eric Reed, quote, "After playing with Patrick Willis, I didn't think it was possible for me to touch the field with another linebacker of his caliber. Then I went to Carolina. Enjoy retirement, Luke Kuechly." Torrey Smith, quote, "Easily one of my favorite teammates and one of the top 3 best players that I've seen. Can't wait to see what's next for you." Riverboat Ron himself, quote, "I had the privilege of playing next to Hall of Famer Mike Singletary and coaching Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher, and Luke Kuechly is worthy of that honor someday. But more important, I will remember Luke's sense of humor, his leadership, and for being a great teammate." Trey Boston, quote, "One of the best teammates I've ever had. The first person you meet when you come into the locker room. Always told people, I teach my son to be like you. You're the model of the standard. Future Hall of Famer. Proud to call you one of the bros. One heck of a career. Love you, bro. Luke." So from the people who are around him, this is a guy who loved the game and was loved by the game and the guys who play the game. And retiring, to me, is absolutely the right call. Don't confuse this with not being hungry or not wanting to work or not wanting to play anymore. This does not look or sound like a guy who's sick of football, who doesn't want to prepare, who doesn't want to do the work, and who does not want to play. In fact, if you watch that video, you'll see a guy who still loves the game and is absolutely crushed by the decision that he's made, except he knows it's the right decision. Like, the goal of every single player in the league, the goal of every single athlete ever, is to be able to leave the game on their own terms. And this is different than me talking to Lorenzo Alexander, who's leaving after 15 years in the league. This is somebody who's 28, who theoretically should still be in their prime. But he made the move to walk away. And in so doing, he joins Andrew Luck, Rob Gronkowski, as the third elite player in the last year alone to retire before the age of 30. And they join guys like Patrick Willis and Calvin Johnson, who did so before them. Each one might have different reasons for retiring, but to me, all of them made the right call. Good for them. That's great. Get in, dominate, make your money, walk away. Like, I don't know Luke Kuechly personally, but I couldn't be happier for the guy. He played the game at a truly elite level, and now he's walking away, hopefully, with his health intact. So there better not be anybody who's going to come in here and crack on him for that decision, or come in here and question his toughness or his commitment. Like, don't bring that crap around here. If you're angry or you're bitter about Luke Kuechly retiring at 28, that says everything about you and nothing about him. You tell me, what's better, him walking away now or playing for a number of years and suffering long-term damage? Would that make you happy? Like I said, I don't know the guy, but it wouldn't make me happy at all. Remember a few days ago when everybody was so pumped about the advice that Marshawn Lynch gave from the podium after Seattle lost? Luke Kuechly is doing exactly what Marshawn said the players should do.
But look, I'll say like this though, right? It's a vulnerable time for a lot of these young dudes, you feel me? They don't be taking care of their chicken right, you feel me? So if there was me, I say take care of y'all money, because that don't last forever. Now, I done been on the other side of a retirement, and it's good when you get over there and you can do what you want to. So I tell y'all right now, while y'all in it, take care of y'all bread. So when y'all done, you go ahead and take care of yourself. So while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies. You know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken. You feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals. Because, look, we ain't lasting that long. You know, I had a couple of players that I played with that, you know what I mean, they no longer here no more. They no longer. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken for when y'all, you know, ready to walk away. You walk away and you be able to do what you want to do. But I appreciate it. Thank y'all. Y'all have a good day.
I appreciate it. Thank y'all. Y'all have a good day. And there's so many Marshawn Lynch moments that I love. I think that's my favorite moment ever, at least off the field. I could do an hour on that. That is amazing. He was asked a few questions about the loss and about his future, kind of waved it all off, but then just started that conversation. That clearly was on his mind. You know, to the young dudes, take care of your bodies, take care of your mentals, take care of your chicken. Money. Chicken meaning money. That's so good. And that's exactly what Luke Kuechly is doing. Taking care of his body, taking care of his mentals, and presumably taking care of his chicken. And he should be celebrated for doing that. I know you're not thinking about this right now, but I will see you in Canton, big dude. Hey, clones, the question of the day. What do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? I can tell you what we don't want. We don't want another bar or another sugary snack or another energy drink. No, instead we want beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled. It's not dry. It's not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. What makes it so good? I'm going to say it's the company behind it. Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. It's quality smoked meat at its finest, and it goes wherever you go. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? A member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020, He is Bill Cowher. Bill, it's so good to have you on the show. How are you?
Doing good, Romy. Yeah, pretty surreal. Still a little bit of a whirlwind right here.
Yeah, why don't we start right there? You've had a couple of days for it to sink in, and in part, Bill, you answered the question, but what's it feel like to hear yourself introduced as a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
It's happened so fast. You know, I'm down here in Nashville going to be ready to do a sit-down. I did this morning with Mike Vrabel for our show on Sunday. We're heading out to Kansas City for a two-hour pregame show, and you know, I think each day you wake up, you know, when it happens Saturday night, I mean, I came back home. It was about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I sat there with my wife for about 10 minutes. I said, I got to go to bed because I got to do a show again tomorrow. We have the first game. So I had to get up and get ready for the show, and we talked a little bit about it and got home on Sunday night. And at that point, I had about 270 texts, and I said, I got to start returning some of these texts, and I've returned every one of them. It's taken me about 2 days to do that. And, so, but every day you wake up, it resonates a little bit more, to be honest with you, Romy. It really does. And it's a pretty special award. It's very humbling. And when you sit back and think about the people that you're going to be in there with, it's a very, very unique award.
We're talking to Bill Cowher. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class. Bill, you mentioned your wife, V, which I want to get to in a minute. But in terms of the 270 texts, who are the types of people that you heard from?
Oh my gosh! I got, because of my wife V, I've Kenny Chesney, you know, Toby Keith, America, Jerry and Dewey, Old Dominion. So that's the music side of it. But then it's the players and the coaches and, you know, the people that worked with you, the friends we have from North Carolina, friends from Pittsburgh, friends from New York. You know, you almost just realize how, you know, I've been able to compartmentalize all these different little fragments of my life with I've had got great balance. I've got friends outside of football, friends inside of football, friends in music. It's been a really unique ride, to be quite honest. And it's been, you know, a joy. And then when you start seeing all the people that you realize, you start seeing all the texts, and these are texts, most of these were texts that I have names on in my contacts. I'm like, wow, I haven't heard from this person in a while. And oh yeah, there's this person. And then there's certain threads that you have groups of people on. And I'm like, oh man. So it was a pretty daunting task. And then I got to the emails, and I go, and then some people like the email. So I had to do those people. And I'm like, so it was, it's just, you know what it is? It does sit back and make you reflect on all the relationships that you've had through the years. And when people can take joy in seeing something happen to you, it just makes you feel very special, very humbled that, you know, you have a part in someone's life that they're able to share that moment with you. And, you know, the players and coaches and that I coached and played with, it just, you know, every time I go, and I returned each one individually, and I never didn't sit there and paste a response to everybody. I did, because each one meant something different. And so, yeah, I almost enjoyed texting back than I did anything else, and recalling special little memories of stories that we had with each one of these people that I reflected. I didn't care how long it would take me for that text. So some of them took longer than others, and it was okay. They each were personalized, though.
Bill Cowher joining us. You know, Bill, this is so great. I love that notion about relationships. Like, when I was younger, sometimes I would hear that. It's all about the relationships. And I'd nod my head, Bill, but I'd be in the back of my head. I'd be thinking, sure, it's not. It's not about that. But as you get older and you mature and you evolve, that's exactly what that's about. It's all about the relationships. So I'm watching this, and I'm seeing this play out on the show, and the rest of the guys on the NFL Today break out T-shirts celebrating the moment. Now, I know, because I appear on that show, I know what the chemistry is like on that program. I know how much you all admire, like, and respect each other. This has been your team. Now, I know you want a team. Yeah. This has been your team for years now. How much did you enjoy sharing that moment with those people?
You know what? I was so happy to have shared it with them. To sit there with Boomer, JB, Nate, and Phil, Drew Kalisky, who's been our guy, man. You know, Drew knew Thursday. And I'm telling him, man, I'm talking to you on the phone. I'm telling you, like, I don't know anything. Don't ask me. He goes, okay, I want to ask you. He knew. I said, man, how could you do that? And so,
great.
But he pulled it off, and I said, you know, it's a family. I tell you, I love our CBS family. And Sean and David and Tyler and Harold and, you know, it's a unique group of people that we all care for each other and we have fun. And what you see is real. It really is. And they didn't even tell anybody on there. They didn't tell Boomer and Nate didn't even know. They had to tell Phil because he's doing the eye vision with me, but I only told him like 10 minutes before. So, because they all knew, like, listen, they're as good as I am, but I can't hold secrets either. And I didn't even tell my wife until like an hour before I got the award. They got her down there at the very last minute with my daughter because they know that they knew our family very well. We're very transparent. We're terrible with secrets. What you see is what you get. And you're right. I love those guys, and I couldn't imagine I've been any different outside of being on national TV. You know, that's the only thing I'm like, okay, this was not how it's supposed to be. It was like really weird seeing David Baker there. Like, okay, whoa, what is going on here? And, I'd come to closure, Rumi. I had talked to V that morning and said, listen, I'm okay not getting in. They had to vote Wednesday. You know, I would think I'd have heard something by now. And Pat Kerwin and Wayne Fiddleman, everybody, you know, they've done all this work. And Pat, have you heard anything? No. I said, you know what? I don't even want to know. I said, you know, I told V, I said, I don't think I'm getting in. I'm okay. I've got closure with this now. I said, you know, I had closure before. Then all of a sudden this finalist thing came up. I, you know, now it's like, oh, it's burned again. And like, I can get excited. And it's like, you know, I'm okay. I don't need to. And I go to the production meeting and you've seen our production meetings. I'm thinking Drew's going to ask, have you heard anything? And no one asked anything. I'm thinking, wow, kind of a respectful distance that they're going to give me. Like, okay, thank you. Like, just give me some time. If I had heard something, you'll hear from me. And then that happens. I'm like, wow, just the range of emotions that you go through in one time, in one day.
Talking to Bill Cowher, he is a Hall of Famer. I was going to say, Bill, so what about V and your daughter Megan? They were both there. What did it mean to share that moment with them?
You know what? It was really special. And it just reminds me of, like, you know, I said, V was there with Megan. And it's just like Kay was there with Megan when I won a Super Bowl. And that was my previous wife who passed away in 2010. And, you know, I just realized how much these women, my three daughters, how much they mean to me and how much perspective they've given me in my life, how much balance I have in my life because of them. And it was so great for them to be there. And the next day on the Top Show, Adam Schein read an Instagram message I got from Lindsay, and I just literally broke down. I just, you know, it meant so much. She's in Tokyo right now with her husband, Ryan Kelly. He plays for a Tokyo team in basketball. And, you know, I just, when we all come back together, like I said, Kay smiling at Top just like my mom and dad are. You know, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and my coach went back there and coached. My parents, very proud people, and got a chance to see their grandkids growing up. And those are the three people that I wish could be there. But, you know, guys like Marty Schottenheimer and Dan Rooney, they help mold who I am today. And, you know, for that, I will always be thankful.
Bill Cowher is my guest. Really quickly, Bill, I'm going to join you in Kansas City on Sunday for the NFL Today. I know people want your thoughts. If you've got a minute or so, what kind of thoughts do you have about the matchup on Sunday?
Contrast of styles. If you want to put it in the boxing terms, man, you got George Foreman going against Muhammad Ali. You know, you got George Foreman being the Tennessee Titans. They just want to get in there. Don't run from me. And you look at the Muhammad, you know, fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. That's going to be the Kansas City Chiefs. So this is the classic boxing matchup of two different styles of football teams. You know, Kansas City is going to be loud. It's going to be really loud. I coached there for 3 years. I know what it's going to be like. You know, it's hard not to pull for Andy in his 21st year. Is this as good a chance as he's going to have? Is this the best team he's had? But then you look at Mike Vrabel. I'm down in Nashville getting ready to do a sit-down. I did a sit-down with him this morning, actually. And, you know, it's going to show on Sunday. You know, I coached Mike. I've coached Mike his first 4 years out of Ohio State. We sat down and reflected a little bit on that time. When you get down with Mike, you need to be talking about a tough guy, a linebacker, makes every game personal. His team absolutely reflects who he is as a coach. It's just two classic styles of football, which makes our game great. There's no one way or cookie cutter way to doing it. These are two distinctly different styles of football clashing for a chance to play in the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a great matchup.
I love the boxing analogy, Foreman and Ali, because as we all know, styles make fights. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020, a studio analyst for the NFL Today. Bill Cowher, my guest. Bill, congratulations sincerely. I really appreciate your thoughts. Looking forward to seeing you and all the guys coming up on Sunday. And congrats once again, Bill.
Thanks, Romy. Hey, listen, you at least this time you don't have to go all the way to New York. We're going to meet you halfway in Kansas City.
And I appreciate you doing that too, Coach. Thanks for looking out for me. It's great. I've pointed out on the show before the comparisons between the Lakers and the Knicks on who would be a bigger dumpster fire this year have aged really badly. Hilariously, in fact. I mean, there was actually a time not that long ago when Irv was quitting midseason and hanging all sorts of dirty laundry on a clothesline outside of Staples. And yes, there was a time not long ago when Jeannie Buss was secretly confiding in Linda Rambis about who the hell knows what. And yes, there was a time not that long ago when six dorks were protesting the front office at the corner of Fig and Chick. But then Anthony Davis showed up, and he started to run alongside LeBron. And now the Lakers are back to being the Lakers, while the Knicks, on the other hand, are still very much the Knicks. One team is at the top of the West, pacing the conference with a comfortable lead. The other team is the Knicks, who are just barely looking up at the Milwaukee Bucks, trailing by the slimmest of margins, 24 and a half games before the All-Star break. And they're already on to their second coach this season. But the comparisons, of course, do not stop in the standings. They never do. Or with ownership. Or with the rosters. No, these comparisons have trickled all the way down to their respective promotions departments. Earlier this month, a dude named Evan from La Habra made a shot from half court at a Lakers game, and my man walked away with a giant cardboard check for 100 GER. Pretty amazing.
Congratulations to Evan. He is at the Mandalay Bay Big Shot Jackpot for $100,000.
Did you hear that? Evan, $100,000. What a sweet moment. What a sweet payday. But that kind of in-game entertainment, of course, is not exclusive to the LA Lakers. You see this in pretty much every arena. Hell, Oklahoma gave a student free tuition for a year a couple of months back when a freshman drained the same shot from the timeline in Norman. You know, big shot, big prize. Unless you're the Knicks. Because if you're the Knicks, you can't do anything right. You can't get anything right. This is an all-time Knicks move. Because this past weekend, they ran the same exact gimmick. Only Matt Kuchar must have been in charge of deciding that payout. Because when a local dude named Anthony Peterson went nothing but net from half court at MSG, he didn't get 100 grand. In fact, my man got nothing but 1,000 bucks. No, that's not even right. Check that. 1,000 bucks in scratch-off tickets. Not $1,000. $1,000 in scratch-off tickets. MKTE. Most Knicks thing ever. Did that stack of scratchers come with a big gulp and a pack of Marb Reds? Or just the carpal tunnel that you know he's going to get? Because according to the Action Network, Peterson was given 200 different $5 tickets, which meant sitting down, getting a coin, and breaking your wrist, scratching off 200 different tickets. And when all was said and done, my man came up with 500 bucks. He turned $1,000 in scratchers into 500 bucks. Maybe the most Knicks thing ever. Maybe like the best thing ever, period. Here's $1,000, yo. Not in cash, but in scratcher tickets. Get to it. This guy just knocked down a shot from half court. Hey, just know that it's not even $1,000. Never mind that guy over there did the same thing and got $100,000. Not only do you not get $1,000, it's not even $1,000, which would have already been the worst prize ever. But it's worse than that the $1,000 that you're so pissed about really is only $500. Man, if it were me, I would tell them to just take me out Charles Oakley style because I'm about to start swinging on dudes. In an interview with the Action Network, Peterson said, quote, "I was sort of like, what the F, man? Some dude just won $100,000 doing the same bleep in L.A., and I get some bum-ass lottery tickets. Still a blessing, though." End quote. Dude, that is such a great quote. You got that half right, my man. You got that half right. It is bum-ass, but it's definitely not a blessing. You're a better person than me. You're a much better person than me for feeling any gratitude whatsoever in that situation, because I wouldn't be. This doesn't even involve me and I'm pissed. I would have no gratitude if I was standing there holding $500 when some other dude who did the same exact thing on the other side of the country is standing there holding $100,000. Exactly where is the blessing in that? That is 100% bum ass. You know what would have been an actual blessing? A blessing would have been James Dolan banning you from his bum-ass arena so you won't ever have to watch his bum-ass team run ever again. And before you take exception to me calling MSG a bum-ass arena, as long as that bum-ass team is running in that bum-ass house, it's a bum-ass arena. What a truly horrible, horrible prize, especially from a franchise that's worth like $4 billion. What? Used gift cards with a mystery remaining balance? Didn't want any of that? Yo, here, bro. Here's a Visa vanilla card. But you got to log in to find out how much money's still worth on that thing. Luckily for Peterson, this story gets even better. Luckily for Peterson, some dude on Twitter who calls himself Mr. Beast, he describes himself as a human ATM. Apparently, he sent this guy $10,000 just because. I mean, not just because. Clearly a promotional stunt for Mr. Beast. But also pretty awesome that some guy on Twitter apparently has more money to spend on a Knicks fan than the Knicks. And even more awesome because it's still just 1/10 of what the Lakers gave their guy. Remember when these franchises were being compared to one another and the question was being asked, who is going to be a bigger train wreck next season? The Knicks or the Lakers? Remember that? Neither do I. Here's what I have to say about that. Wash away my shot. Wash away my prize with a stack of scratcher tickets.
Wash away my troubles. Wash away my pain with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow.
It's as bum-ass as it gets. Did you know every single time your team takes the floor, you're going to be in the news for all the wrong reasons? It's going to be so embarrassing. Why are you having us call even further attention to your bum-assness? It's insane. Maybe that's why KD went to the Nets. Did you try to offer this guy a contract and scratchers? Hey, Kyrie. Hey, Kyrie. Come over here. Play with us. I got a stack of scratchers for you. Do you really look a guy in the eye with a straight face and say, if you make this shot from half court, we'll give you $1,000, but not $1,000, $1,000 in scratchers. $5 per 200. We will even include this little stick that you can use to scratch them off. If the stick breaks, just use your fingernail or your own dime. I mean, that can't, how is that even real? Colin Sexton is my guest. Colin, good to have you on the show. How are you?
How you doing? How you doing?
Good, dude. How about you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Appreciate it. So you're coming off a tough game last night against the Clippers where you were battling them throughout the first half. Then they pulled away. So let me ask you this. As a competitor, how do you go about getting that loss out of your system and moving on to make sure that you're ready for Memphis? What's your process?
Well, after a game like that, we just come in the locker room and they just pretty much just talk to us about what our thoughts were. And we just sit there and pretty much just communicate and talk about different things. And then the next day we'll watch film and just try to, like, clean up the things that we need to improve on. Maybe it's, like, transition defense. Maybe the little things that could have helped us change the game by a lot. So we just, like, try to watch our mistakes a whole lot and pretty much just for next game not do the same thing.
Colin Sexton joining us. All right, so last night was the second game of a back-to-back. It's the fourth game of a six-game road trip. I mean, that can wear you down physically, even mentally. So how do you go about approaching a day like today to rest and recover and get ready for the next game? What does that involve?
Just go lifting weights and doing a lot of stretching just because you got to make sure your body is strong. You got to make sure you're still flexible. You might be sore after these games, so a lot of sleep and a lot of recovery is well needed. Just because, like, we've been going a lot and it's a lot of games in the season. You got to make sure you're taking care of your body by also eating the right foods and doing the little things that's going
to
help.
You know, it seems to me like as a young player, you're already starting to figure this out. But then again, there are stories from last season where you would be at the practice facility until 3 a.m. putting up shots, or you'd go there after a flight landed from a road trip. So exactly where did that kind of work ethic come from, and how much do you love that grind?
I love it. My work ethic comes from my parents just because, like, they wake up 3, 4 o'clock in the morning with no complaints, going to work each and every day. So me and my siblings, we all just, like, pretty much got that work ethic. And it's easy for me just to go to the gym and work out and just try to be the best person I can be. It's a lot better than getting up and going to a real job and just because I'm doing something I love. So when you love something, you put the time, put the effort, do whatever it takes to make sure you get there and moving forward.
Cleveland Cavalier, Colin Sexton joining us. You know, I bring up the work ethic because, you know, you have that legend, but also there's been so much that's been built up around the fact that you were unranked in high school, and then you became a five-star recruit, like you just kind of came out of nowhere, or you were some kind of late bloomer. But when you consider the hours that you were always putting in, going back to when you were a toddler even, does it feel like you came out of nowhere, or was this just the natural growth and progression in your game?
I feel like it was just a natural growth in my progression. I felt like I just had to be around the right people so that people could see me and see what I could actually do. So I got that when I started playing EYBL. And once I started playing EYBL, then everyone pretty much just started knowing my talent and pretty much knowing that I could be a good player.
All right, so when you look back on it, what's the biggest difference then between college ball and the NBA? Like, is it about talent? Is it about the schemes? Is it about the pace? Or is it about something else?
I would say it's talent, because every game you're going against somebody really good on the other team, as well as you have to lock in mentally because you can't mess up on any coverages just because if you mess up on a coverage, they'll score or maybe a turnover or something like that. So you have to be locked in physically and mentally, and you got to make sure you're taking care of your body. I know because the amount of games is way more than college, so that's a huge impact from college to NBA.
Colin Sexton joining us. You know, talking to you right now, it's pretty clear you're definitely a positive person. You're optimistic. But, you know, something that comes with a job, of course, is criticism and people saying what you cannot do. Like at one point, there may have been a rap that you didn't shoot the ball really well, but then you hit more than 40% from deep as a rookie. Then they'll move on to something else to complain about. You've said you're not afraid to hear that. You can actually use it as motivation. Do the critics and people who've got that kind of thing to say, does that fire you up, and can you use that as fuel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I try to use that, the criticism, the hate, everything that people say I can't do, try to use it as fuel, going to the gym and working on those things. So as time goes on, I just continue to show and prove, like, all right, give me something else like that I can't do, or say something that I'm not really good at so I can work on that. So people said I couldn't shoot, so I just started working on my jump shot even more and trying to make it more consistent, and I shot it really good. So,
yeah, you did. So after they said that and you proved them wrong, what was the next thing that they moved on to?
Defense. They said I really wasn't a really good defender, but if you look at most of our games, they put me on one of the best players no matter what, who we're going against, and I take that challenge because whatever my team needs for me, I'll make sure I do it. If that's going to make it tough for somebody on the other team, I will.
Cavalier, Colin Sexton, my guest. And then Tristan Thompson had a great quote earlier this year when he was talking about you and Darius Garland. He said, quote, "I think Colin and DG, they're more like the new age millennials. They just absorb everything. They don't backtalk. It's not like they're D heads or D bags. They're good guys. I enjoy being around them," end quote. So as a second-year player, how do you approach both being a leader, but at the same time making sure that you're humble and you're learning from the vets and you're fitting in?
Just because I would say just the vets, they know what it takes to win. They've been to the finals. They won championships. So it's coming from a good place, and it's coming from a place where you know, like, all right, they've been there. They've been where we want to get to. So whatever knowledge, whatever criticism or anything they can give us, we just got to take it and run with it. And I feel like me and DG, we have been pretty much just taking that challenge and listening to them and pretty much just getting better as the season goes on.
Talking to Colin Sexton, and we will do so for a few more moments. He's helping me close the show. There was that story last week surrounding the team and something your head coach, John Beilein, said in a film session. He says he meant to say slugs, but that's not the word that came out. You said last week, quote, "He calls us slugs all the time because we're slow, but it's good. We knew what he meant. It just got blown out of proportion," end quote. So what was your reaction in the moment, and then what did you make of the entire situation overall?
In the moment, we all like, all right, coach. We pretty much knew what he meant, but it's just like when tensions are high right after film, everybody was like kind of upset because he was getting on us about film and stuff. So when it happened, everybody was like shocked a little bit, but we all just sat there. We all knew what he meant, just because, like, especially in transition defense, he'd be like, all right, look at y'all slugs getting back on defense. Like, y'all are moving slow. Like, we need y'all to run. So we knew what he meant. Just got blown out of proportion. But I feel like since then, Coach Beilein, he's just came even more closer to us, and we've came more closer as a team, and I feel like we're moving in the right direction.
Colin Sexton, my guest. You know, Cleveland is such a proud city. I mean, it's a city. It's a great sports town, and it's a city that's had some great moments, but some really tough sports moments too. What's it mean to you to play in that city and to play for those fans?
It's amazing. It's amazing. The Cleveland fans, I feel like they're one of the best in the country, just because, like, no matter what, they're going to be with you. Y'all losing, they're going to come to the games. Like, all the games pretty much sell out. So I feel like they're riding with us, and things are definitely going to get better. And I feel like Cleveland is a place where they have really true and loyal fans.
Hey, Colin, one last thing. You were part of something really cool that I want to ask you about. You were part of a project where three schools participated in a writing contest. In fact, you organized it. How did that idea come to be, and why was that an important project for you?
It was important to me just because, like, people don't really do that, and I wanted to do something that was different. I wanted to just be able to interact with everyone and see how their point of view and what they're thankful for. And I read so many letters that was amazing, and all the students that participated, they got a prize, and then the winners, like, it was just amazing. This is my second year doing it, so I'll just continue to do it years to come, and I love it. I love it just because when I was in school, I remember having to do, like, little writing assignments to see who's going to write the best. Just the competitiveness, though. It's cool.
All right, so finally, the topic of this contest was who or what inspires me and why. So let me turn that around on you. So where you are in your life right now, who or what inspires you and why?
Inspires me, I would say my parents. Just everything they've been through, and they're still together, and they're still pushing and always there for me and my siblings. It's amazing just because, like, they never complain. When you never complain about anything, you just go out there and work, and that's someone I just look up to and just to be thankful to have in my life, and that's my parents.
Good night now!